back to another episode of the Exterminatus Podcast, your one-stop shop for all things competitive here in the new world of Warhammer 40,000. With me is my co-host, Ray.
Hello.
And, of course, our special guest, Archon Skari from Kamora.
Kablam.
So here's a question. The proper pronunciation of the Master of Blades, is it Drazar? Drazar, like you're surprising somebody.
Surprise. No, I say Drazar.
Okay. I always catch myself going, Drazar, like I'm surprising somebody, like, happy birthday or surprise.
That's kind of how you go. You'd be like, aha, your bowels are no longer with you.
Yeah.
Or your head is no longer attached to your shoulders. Congratulations.
Clearly my Drazar is broken then, because every time it's a surprise is usually on me. I'm like, ah, I will take out your Primaris Apothecary. 11112. Oh,
that's the opposite of my Drazar. My Drazar runs in and goes, is that a knight? There's 18 wounds on your knight. Who's next?
I only did that once, but it felt good. I did it to Don when he was playing Rodicus. I was like, it's like, oh, I'm trying to make a competitive list using a great unclean one. I'm like, okay, it's got to die. He's like, what's
for anybody, for anybody out there who doesn't understand where we're coming from, Drazar can do up to 4 damage with each one of his attacks when he rolls a 6 to wound. So it's really up to you to roll 6s, as that is the plan that wins every game.
Yes, it does.
Yep.
So speaking of plans, always plan for the future. And the future are our children, to quote the great Whitney Houston, which I can't believe I did on the air. So, Scar, you wrote a fantastic article, and Ray shared it with me as well. And I think everyone needs to check this out. And you've recently been gaming with your 8-year-old son.
Yes, I have, especially since, the COVID quarantines and shutdown started. You know, him and I have been spending a lot more quality time together in all the time that he would have normally been at school.
So one of the things you stepped definitely brought up in one of the points, and I have to admit, me being a control freak, it was a little hard to accept, but it definitely works when working with my son as well. Let him be messy.
Every time. Yeah, you have to let them get their hands dirty and just feel like they're a part of the process and, you know, kind of let them explore. Like, that's what I find with my son. You know, he's very, like, he wants to get into that creative juices, but if you're constantly worrying about him not making a mess and stuff like that, you know, a lot of the times they'll kind of be afraid to just, like, let that expression kind of come out and be a part of what they want to achieve.
So one of the things I found interesting, my son got into it as well. He's 10, so not too much older than your son. And it was interesting. He really got into it. He still, you know, we get up every morning on Saturday to watch all the previews on the GW community page and all that. And one of the things he wanted his last birthday was a Warhammer themed. And the hardest part was, how do you get the other kids to who have no idea what he's talking about involved in this? So how's your son been able to get this to his friends, the word out about Warhammer?
Well, he knows his dad does gaming for a living, and so he doesn't, like, he plays mostly Pokemon, so that's what he's the stage at with his friend. So he doesn't really, you know, he sort of separates that and doesn't really talk Warhammer with his friends at yet. However, when it gets to it, I'll cross that bridge when it comes to it. But whatever he's most comfortable with, you know, I'm assuming it won't be all grim dark. You know, I'm not exactly going to be like, you know what the Dark Eldar really do, kids. I'm probably going to you know, keep it as PG as possible for as long as possible.
That sounds like a good plan. Yeah, I've kind of same boat. So yeah, it was fun for trying to get that. Crossing that and kind of, but it's interesting. So we'll get into this when we talk about the meta later in the show. So my son was like picking an army, and one thing I learned from work as well is sometimes you have to let your employee kind of fall on their face so you can kind of bring them back up and teach them the right way to do things. Mm-hmm. And he chose his army, and then, you know, it's just like, okay, we don't have to always pick the cutting bleeding edge meta choices. Just let them pick, you know, rule of cool and have fun with this. Yeah, as we talk later, I think he picked the number one army for 9th edition. So I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding.
Custodes.
Close. He's got Admech.
Okay, yes. That comes in a close second or tied for first. Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
So he's super excited, and I'm just like, grrr. You know, I've lost my edge on Xbox. Now I'm going to lose my edge at, you know, Dining Table 40K. Okay, great. Awesome. But yeah, I have to admit, with the new edition, with the new 500-point combat patrol games, super excited about this. This is a lot of fun. So,
yeah, I also like power level is like my favorite thing to do, especially when I'm playing with my son, because it's super simple and he can quickly do math in his head. You know, just for like, you know, 4 points for this. And then he can go, and I go, which gun do you want on the model? And he's like, that one. I'm like, cool, because it doesn't matter. Right. You know, and he just, so it's, yeah, it's good to go with the flow when it comes to that.
Sounds like a plan. So, yeah, definitely check out that article. It's still in the top feed on the Warhammer community page. So, last question regarding that. So, what was it like when you got the phone call from Games Workshop? We would like you to contribute to our page.
I was like, this is awesome. And, you know, my contact, I actually got an email and they were like, you know, would you like to write an article? I was like, yes, yes, I would. And they're like, well, what pitch us some ideas? And I was like, well, I'd like to do, I don't know, some of this, some of that. You know, I've been gaming a lot with my kid. And they're like, ooh, gaming with your kid sounds cool. I was like, awesome. So then I wrote an article. They sent it, I sent it in. They sent notes back. I kind of, you know, wrote it again and kind of tweaked it. And then it's been sitting, you know, in could be published status for, I want to say, a good month and a half to 2 months. Oh. And so this whole time I was like, I wonder if it's ever going to happen, you know, but they, you know, they put it up and I just started getting messages being like, hey, I saw you wrote something. I was like, oh my goodness, they did put it up. So I was really happy that they decided to run it. So that's fantastic.
So congratulations. It's an awesome privilege, awesome honor. And it was a great article. So definitely check it out if you've not read it yet. All right. The other big announcement, Ray put it up on our Facebook page, the FAQs that were supposed to happen day one happened day minus seven, a little bit early. And quite a bit of surprises, quite a bit of conversation from that. What were some of your guys' highlights from those FAQ announcements?
Well, I want to say, first of all, a lot of these FAQs just bring a lot of the questions just into line with what 9th edition has. So a lot of these, like, you know, counts as stationary when moving and firing on vehicles. It's a lot of it's just like, just pretend this line doesn't exist in your vehicle, you know, for example, because it doesn't actually do anything anymore for tanks, you know. And then there are a couple of clarifications in there. Like, they're not as in-depth as maybe some people would have hoped or would have expected. But I feel that as new codexes come out, like a lot of these like new rules or things that they want to add in and whatnot will sort of make their way in to the game.
Ray, what did you think?
It wasn't quite what I was expecting. I was expecting this whole big thing for each one. It's like, okay, this is how these are different. This is how those are different. And I kind of cemented this idea that I've started getting in my head is that the new edition isn't so much 9th as much as it is something like an 8.5. It's the edition we've been working with, but there have been some major changes. So I just kind of... That's part of why these 8th edition codexes are still in use and we're not, you know, going like a huge reset right out the gate. In fact, I downloaded quite a few and a lot of them only had a couple things that were different, which anybody who didn't catch it, that's the stuff that's in blue.
Yeah. So a lot of the stuff was the same. They changed a few things. And we'll see how it goes. Like, at the same time, you can't, like, they have to sort of see the game play out in order to really start catching things that were like, wait, what about this? And what about that?
I think I was in that camp you described expecting, here are all the big changes that are coming. It says, I think they're going to wait till the Codex comes out. Rather, like, they had hinted that Night Lords would affect the combat attrition rolls in addition to just morale rolls. So I was like, oh, what about this faction? They have a similar ability. And it didn't happen. I was like, oh. But I'm like, well, let's give it a little time to breathe here. We're just talking about getting it ready to play on day one. And then, you know, down the road, we can make some changes. So. But yeah, nothing really jumped out. I thought from a competitive standpoint, interesting to see Chaplain Dreads getting the legend treatment. So that was kind of, oh, okay.
Not a legend treatment, just not listed.
Yeah.
As in, like, people are looking for the points, they're just not there. They just don't exist anymore.
Never happened. Are you a chaplain? Yeah, you put me in the dreadnought, right? Why don't you stand over there in the waiting room? We'll get to you as soon as we can, sir.
Talking about Forge World, though, as a Drakkari player, it was cool for them to add in the Forge World Raven jet fighter for the Dark Eldar, the old Raven. They added in its data slate at the bottom of the Forge World FAQs with a power level. Like, it's there's no points for it. But it's like, in your narrative games, you can use your old classic model. I thought that was pretty cool.
That was pretty cool. There was a couple of them are additions there as well. So it's interesting looking at all the all the messages I've been getting on my phone as people peruse through their point levels and people try to apply some sort of crazy graphs to all this. We knew going in that everybody's points levels would go up. So it's funny that everyone was shocked when it actually did. So there was kind of that overwhelming sense of dread that, oh my gosh, my insert faction here has been downgraded, but I think everybody's points levels went up. Now there's some clear winners and losers, but overall I think the game plan of build an army using 8th edition points at 1600 to 1500, you were pretty safe.
Yeah, 1500 points was what I did, and it was nice to get used to playing the missions with using fewer units. I think that was one of the biggest keys. But yeah, some armies got off lightly, in my opinion. Some armies, took a little bit of a heavier hit. However, there's a lot of keyboard crusaders out there that are, very vocal about the changes. You sort of have to play the game and really sort of like see what the actual impact is before we make assumptions.
Now, you've probably had more experience than most when it comes to the Keyboard Crusaders in terms of actually playing the game. You actually attended a tournament this past weekend. If I'm sitting at home going like, I haven't had a chance to play the game yet, what are we missing? What's probably the top two things we're missing from playing the game versus theorizing the game?
So first and foremost, it's the way that the primary and secondary missions interact with like the point costs of units. I find as a Drakkari player, for example, a lot of the units went up in cost. Things just simple Cabalite warriors, for example, and that might be something that a lot of people might, kind of scratch their heads at. However, as playing the game and seeing how important objective secured, small, super fast moat-like units are to take the objectives on the table or take them away from your opponent, I can see why they're costed in this way, because they have a direct impact in the way that the game is supposed to be played.
How big are the actions? Because when we first saw the actions mechanic, I thought, this is very similar to the competitive missions in Infinity. And that's kind of, so I was like, okay, you really actually have to build your armies in Infinity. You have your combat options, and then you have your action, people. How is it in 40K that you're still, basically it's just any infantry can do it.
So the actions are a big part of the game. However, you need to adjust your depends on what sort of missions you've decided to take, or secondaries, or if there's an additional, mostly your secondaries, and you have to have units that can perform actions. However, they're not the be all end all, but there are some secondaries that your army might want to do, or in certain matchups are the only things you can do to get points. So having the option to have units that can do actions is highly important. And it's very important to understand what the parameters of the action is, and getting yourself into a position with your army to achieve these actions throughout the course of the game. And that's going to take a lot of practice of physical maneuvering and timing. And that's one of the things that I've learned, or have had the chance to learn over the last couple of weeks playing games, is things like when to raise the flag, how many flags you need to, max out those points over the course of the game. If you're doing if you're doing any of the psychic ones, where you need to be positioned, what's feasible against certain armies. So they are an integral part of the gameplay. It's just really figuring out what works with your playstyle and therefore correlating how many units you need that are able to do actions within your list.
Funny you bring that up. I was watching your battle report on your site, which is Scarcast, I believe, is the best way to find it.
Yeah, on YouTube.
Shameless plug right there.
That's so right. Thank you.
You're welcome. I was watching the one that's coming to mind is the one you're playing the Tyranid player. And I believe that was one of those. He had to take a secondary where it's involved taking center field. And as well as a psychic. Oh, it was like an all or nothing 15 pointer. And basically he got
like
there
too ritual, late. Yeah.
Yeah. And he basically got there too late. And he basically ran out of time, if I remember that correctly.
Yeah. So he started it. So with psychic ritual, you need to have a psyker or a psychic unit within 6 inches of the center of the battlefield. And they basically have to cast a psychic power. That is the only psychic power they can cast that turn 3 times before the end of the game. And he basically got onto the objective on turn 3, which means he needed to do it 3, 4, and 5 in order to complete it. But at that point, he didn't really have enough to screen out what the things in my army that could go and kill his psyker. So he cast it once, and then I was able to jump in and kill the psyker that could cast the power, and then he just couldn't do it for the rest of the game. And because it's an all or nothing, you know, it's all or nothing. If he would have moved up more aggressively and kind of moved the psyker behind him, he would have had that time to cast that power 3 times and then get the points.
Now, one thing I've also noticed as each of your battle reports, I think the first game was, might have been the demon against the demon opponent. They had the 3 large Slaanesh greater demons. I think that was a close game. It was only about 45 points were scored on by both players. The Tyranid game was about 60 points. And then it sounds like the tournament you're just at, you're averaging 70 to almost 80 points in a couple games. It feels like as you get better at the game and understanding the timing, those scores will go up.
Yes, definitely. And it's not just the timing, it's understanding which ones to take against which opponents. And that's usually the thing that takes the longest when you're playing competitively, is understanding how your list plays to different armies without changing your list, which is one of the reasons why I like, you know, keeping the same thing as close to the same thing as possible, because then I just use the tools you have at your disposal in different ways based on different opponents.
Makes sense. Yeah, eliminate your variables as much as possible and know what to expect. So, interesting enough, any other changes we're expecting between now and release day? So any other news that we haven't heard from that we're waiting to hear about before release day on Saturday?
I haven't heard anything else. The only thing was there was the GT stuff that was leaked. So I'm personally very curious to read through it and see what sort of like the GT pack is going to be to give us a good understanding of what to expect when we go to events.
Yeah, I felt like it was a really neat to see the GT pack, that it was slightly different than the book missions. I know on Signals of the Frontline, Frontline Gaming came back since we weren't allowed to talk about it till it was released. So there's a lot of misconceptions that all the tournaments be running the book missions. That's not the actual case. They're running the GT pack missions. So some slight changes there, but overall, I think you hit it on the head on our pre-show. This is not the ITC missions we're used to.
Nope, it is not. It's different, and you have to approach that with the mentality that it is different.
So what is it that we probably should prepare for? So when we talk about who's going to rank well in the meta, we have a good framework of what we're talking about.
I think someone who understands that the secondaries are not your ITC secondaries. These are not things that you just go and, you know, check a box and go, I'm going to get 5 points for this or whatever it was with the ITC. This is, you know, you're hoping to get 15. Some don't even go up to 15. You know, so in practice, a lot of the times you're going to be trying to get at least 8 to 12 points out of these secondaries. So don't expect to like maximize them every single time. Just expect them to be something that you're trying to fight for as the game goes, so that the game doesn't get away from you. And then really focus on scoring and denying the primary aspect of the game, which is all about scoring objectives.
One of the things that's probably missing, there is a secondary related to this, is there's still plenty of hold and hold more. There's actually more points available for that. But the kill and kill more is missing now from those of us who are familiar with ITC missions. How important is killing still in the game? And is it something you know, that we should prepare for, because everybody keeps talking about durability in troops.
Yeah, so killing is still an important part of the game. Like, you, if there's a big threat coming at you, you still need to have the capability to go in and eliminate the threat. But instead of it being killing for the sake of killing a unit, it's eliminating the threat to allow you to achieve your mission objectives instead of just killing something for the sake of getting points. You know, so I think the whole nature of kill more changes, even though there are some secondaries that have to do with killing, you know, killing characters, killing monsters, killing vehicles, you know, that sort of thing. It becomes a lot more tactical in game of which targets to eliminate or to kill units on objectives that then allow you to turn the primary around onto your favor or into your favor, essentially.
Were there anything else from the FAQs that jumped out at you that you want to mention?
Not me, no.
Something I was expecting that I didn't see, and I'm sure we'll see it at some point, was addressing the previous kind of additions that they mentioned when it comes to Grey Knights and Thousand Suns, when it comes to their, you know, they're being able to do Smite and like Thousand Suns not have to have it scale up on them.
Oh, the Battle Brother. No, Psychic. I forgot what it's called. Yes, I know what you're talking about. So, yeah, they don't get the +1 every time it's cast. They can always casting it on a 5. Yeah. Okay. Good point. I forgot about that. Apparently, there's also some controversy the way the rules are written that makes it sound like a single model can cast Smite as many times as they can cast, which I think will get, sounds like it'll be clarified pretty quickly. It's not intended that way.
Yeah, I don't think it's intended that way either. You know, experience has told me that if it's too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true.
True, right.
Yeah.
Are you a gamer that has more bare plastic than you have time to paint? Do paintbrushes spontaneously combust when you hold them? If either of these is true, contact White Crow Studios and get your models painted by a college-trained professional painter. You can contact Bo at whitecrow.commissions@gmail.com and view his previously painted models at White Crow Studios on Facebook.
So interesting stuff. Yeah, as I've been reworking some of my lists as well with the new point values and trying to get used to the new point values, there's definitely, you know, most of us own more than one army. You start looking at that and you realize everybody did see a point increase, but not everybody saw as much of a point increase or the same models. And so there's definitely some speculation out there in terms of which models have, or which factions, I should say, have risen to the top of the list and some who have maybe taken a hit. So let's talk about our top three. We kind of hinted that early at the show. So top three factions based on what we've seen so far.
Well, number one, drumroll. Or should we go number three, drumroll?
Let's do number three here.
So number three, meta-analysis. You've heard it here first, folks. Will be the rise of the Ultramarines. There you go. Ultramarines, ho! No, I think they're Marines, number one. That makes them powerful, just for being Marines. But secondly, they have a variety of rules interactions that work very well within the framework of 9th edition. What I mean is, they can fall back and shoot, which is incredibly powerful, being something that has been taken away from almost everything, namely things that could fly. And then being able to keep it abate with the negative modifiers to hit, also being one of the only like loyalist chapters that can take advantage of the Supreme Commander detachment until we know what the keyword Supreme Commander will go on in different codexes, allowing them to get lots of command points, decent amount of HQs, lots of support units. I think they're going to be sitting comfortably at number three.
It's interesting you picked them over Iron Hands. I thought Iron Hands were the most powerful force in the universe.
Well, you know, depends. You know, if you're playing Jeff like I did this Sunday, I mean yesterday, Jeff, you know, if you're out there, I love you, buddy. Then they're at the bottom of the totem pole. I'm just messing with Jeff. He's awesome. No, but Iron Hands still very, very tough, and I think they'll be good at the objective part of the game. Thing is, that ability to fall back and still act is going to be very important, and the ability for them to jump back and forth from doctrines, as well as have some really cool stuff like redeployment, which is very powerful in this edition. They also have access to an Overwatch strat that's like Tau, where they can get all their buddies to, you know, hop in and help. So there's a lot of value in what they bring to the table competitively.
Interesting. Ray, who do you have as your top, as number three?
I was actually leaning more towards Raven Guard.
Raven Guard? More Marines. Okay, why Raven Guard?
Well, memory serves, their chapter tactic hasn't in any way substantially decreased. They've still got that advantage to being in various types of cover, and an addition where it's easier to get cover.
That's a good point. For a lot of people also talking about how you anticipate the build of those particular armies, is guess what I'm trying to say.
Or Raven Guard or Ultramarines? Or both?
Raven Guard. So are you thinking still sticking mostly Primaris with all the additional Eliminators like they've been in the past, or are you looking at something, you know, just look something new and different?
Well, I don't know how the new stuff that's slowly going to be coming out is going to affect it, but I could still definitely see them utilizing some of the various Phobos stuff that allows them to start off further up ahead.
Yeah.
If nothing else for secondaries more than the primaries now.
There's also something to note is some of them have, some of the missions have special rules, right? And, you know, if you're playing book missions, there's even a mission where you're not allowed to pre-game deploy or pre-game move into No Man's Land. So Raven Guard are going to love that mission.
I didn't even see that one. I missed that.
Yeah, it's just one of the missions in the main rulebook. It's called No Man's Land, and you cannot deploy anything. It's like hammer and anvil deployment, and the middle part of that deployment, like the middle part, you can't pre-deploy or like move into it or anything for any reason. So having like that sort of thing in missions is going to be very interesting, considering, you know, some army builds might have to think outside the box to circumvent having to play a mission like that and have strategies put in place to kind of like help them out.
Interesting. Yeah, definitely read your missions carefully, because that could be a big shock at the table if you're not ready for that. I think it's a nice balance too, because, you know, that interesting that comes through, you know, that every mission will allow you to do the same trick every week. So that's kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
All right, back to Sky, your number two choice for the upcoming meta.
So my number two choice would go for Adeptus Mechanicus. Personally, I think not necessarily because they got a points decrease. Like some of their stuff went up that was good, you know, like the Belarus Disintegrators went up in points, you know, anything that was like OBSEC. But because of the addition of the Ranger dog horsey things, which are it's a technical term that only the top of AdMech players will know, of course. But the ability to pre-game move and have a stratagem to basically run away when somebody targets you as a charge has so many crazy, like, competitive implications. You know, not being able to tie them up or getting blocked from like, you can't multi-charge anything nearby. All in all, that combined with the ability to shoot anything that shows their head to death with giant robots that can no longer be tagged in close combat is very powerful, in my opinion. I think you're going to see a surge of the machine guys everywhere.
I'm seeing a lot of online chatter about combining those guys with the Mars doctrine, and then, well, like a better term, and then the stratagem, so they can just pump out mortal wounds. I'm just like, oh, okay, great.
Yep. Oh, yes. Very, very powerful.
Interesting that you still keep ranking that high when some of the building blocks from the old edition, such as the Onager Doomcrawler, got a severe points increase.
Yeah.
So, Ray, who do you have as number two on your list?
So I think there's going to be a decent amount of people who are going to disagree with me on this, but I think Tyranids. this edition with the smaller table size, they're going to get across the table easier. There's also, you know, one of the things that people will might try to point out is morale, but as long as they're in Synapse, they're not going to care. And ultimately, I don't think Blast is going to make as big of an impact as people think it's going to.
I like the idea of Tyranids as well. I think, especially looking at, you know, your report that Skari had, you know, right off the bat, when he, multiple Tyrannocytes. The larger, I think it's blanking on the name of that unit, but the big guy, you know, the idea of taking one of those was laughable. Now they've got the acid spray and able to move forward. Suddenly they've become quite vogue. Plus they got quite a few upgrades in Psychic Awakenings. I mean, Tyranid Warriors being able to slough off AP -1 and -2 as Sudets of Survivability. So in theory, I think they would do really well on the primary objectives as well. Overall, yeah, I thought Tyranids would rank a lot higher. There's a lot of, to use Skari's term, keyboard crusaders who have put Tyranids at the near bottom. I think it's how you play them. I think it, the hardest part, and Skari, you can voice in on this from your playing in actual games, getting around the new coherency rules, I think, is going to be the hardest thing to learn.
It's one of the, it does catch a lot of people off guard, you know, when they're like deploying or moving. I think it's either that or the new character rules where, you know, now characters, in order to not get sniped out, have to have, you know, units that are sizable next to them and that be close to those units and or vehicles or monsters close to them as well. Because we're so used to leaving our characters out in the open on objectives or taking secondary points or whatever with a sizable chunk of army or something hidden away at the front that would sort of prevent anybody from targeting your character. But now characters sort of have to stay close to the action in a lot of situations. I think those two things are really something that takes people off guard when they first play the game itself.
Good point. Also, we talked a little bit about Supreme Commander this week as well as last week. Ray, the internet is spoken, and definitely I'm in the minority. They agree with you. Swarm Lord should be the Tyranid Supreme Commander.
Yeah, it's just the one that makes sense. It's the only one that really makes sense.
So we will keep it eyes and ears open, see if that actually comes into fruition. So be curious to see that. All right, Skari, number one choice for the upcoming meta.
Number one choice would have to be Custodes. I think after playing them, especially, but seeing them in action, I can see them playing both the primary and secondary missions exceedingly well. They have durable infantry. They have very fast, movable, firepower-hungry bikes, and they have the ability to reserve deep strike. And I think one of the biggest things they benefit from is the addition of so many command points to their cores, where they get to, you know, take a moment, look for a Custodes codex, look in the chapter proved for Custodes, and read some of their stratagems. They are incredible stratagems that they can use. And the ability that they have to now use said stratagems liberally throughout the course of the game really gives them an edge, combined with the fact that they didn't really go up in points almost at all. I know armies that actually went down in points with certain builds. And that just makes them just dangerous, because they're just going to come in hot to the new edition. And if you don't have a plan to deal with them, you know, you'll be surprised when you get murdered by a bunch of golden boots.
So I'll play a little devil's advocate with this, because I've seen several people, it seems to be almost the popular choice. Oh, Custodes, now they're getting a full list of command points that can actually use their stratagems. I'm still on the fence where, yes, those Dawn Eagle jet bikes were annoying to deal with, but you've got these small, super elite units, and it's one of those things where one bad round of shooting, you're going to be picking those models up. What am I missing at this point that is going to make that go away?
Well, I'm going to tell you that because they're all objectives secured, and the game is all about scoring objectives, it becomes very hard to not only take them away from the opponent, but to hold yours at all. When you've got, you know, 10 of these jet bikes and or jet bike character coming at you at breathtaking speeds or neck breaking speeds, which then takes away your objectives and your ability to score any points until you kill them all, which can be very hard to do if you're not equipped to do it.
Interesting. Okay. So it's more the jet bikes. Are we going to see the return of the Telamon and some of the other Forge World goodies?
I think you'll see. I think the big meanies are going to be the Alaris Terminators and then some of the Forge World stuff.
So some of the old favorites coming back again.
Well, yeah, it's like a unit of Smash Captains. An Alaris Terminator is like a Smash Captain in a unit of Smash Captains. And they come down and just beat you up. That's what they do. They come down and beat you up. That's their job.
Oh my gosh, that's a scary, terrifying thought. Ray, who do you have as the top dog for the meta coming forward?
I have Custodes too, for basically every reason the scar he just mentioned.
Big golden boots of doom. That's what we're going to call them. You know, for example, Darren from Canhammer has been playing Custodes forever. And they're making shirts that say we played Custodes before they were cool. Nice. And because they have a feeling it's going to be quite popular to play. Plus, you only need like 4 boxes of models and you have 2,000 points. So I have a feeling that quite a few people will be able to pick them up on the cheap and just put them on the table ready to play.
Yeah, back in 8th edition, definitely. I was just going to say, back in 8th edition, it's an army, one of the cheapest armies to buy at about $400 or $500 for a 2,000-point army.
And a lot of people bought those armies back in the 8th edition, and they kind of went, oh, this isn't working out for me, and they kind of put them on a shelf. So I think this is, you know, those who are new to jump on the bandwagon, it should be easy to be able to buy them up. And those who jumped on the bandwagon earlier and put them away, there's quite a few out there. So I think you're right. You will be seeing this quite a bit on the table. So being this is the number one threat, what is the number one solution to defeating them?
My solution, at least right now, is going to be lots of lots of Heat Lance Talos. That's my solution. Melter guns, essentially.
That's a big change from the traditional loadout from a Talos. What makes the heat guns?
It's the same points. Mm-hmm. Same points, but you're looking at it's strength 6, so nothing crazy, but it'll, you know, wound jet bikes on 4s unless they do the -1 strength strat. Then you just have to shoot a different target. But you're looking at basically melter guns, strength 6, AP 5 melter guns, which doesn't just kill Custodes, like that's one reason, but they work in a lot of different situations in the current meta. So currently the core of my list will be 9 Talos with 18 heat lances. So I'm hoping that I can kill some Custodes with that.
Interesting. All right. So definitely getting away from the Haywire, which is pretty much dedicated towards anti-vehicle, something a little more all-rounded.
Mm-hmm.
All right. 9 Talos, huh? Okay.
Yes, absolutely. Even if they did go up, still worth every point.
Yeah. They did go up. I believe they're rocking with that loadout. I think you still doing the chain flails. I think they're rocking about 120 as opposed to the.
It's 115 instead of 98 or something.
Yeah.
So they went up moderately considering.
Yeah, they're definitely one of the models. I was like, they're going to balloon in points. And I was pleasantly surprised when I saw that point total. I was like, all right. Okay. They're still viable. They're definitely one of those I thought survived the points increase overall.
Yes, agreed.
All right, so as we said, the internet is filled with ideas. I'm going to throw in mine real quick. Just want to curious where you guys fall on this. But for me, I think in the top 3, I'm not sure. I definitely agree with you guys that probably AdMech and or Stardies would be, Custodes rather, would be a top, as well as the good old Marines. Nobody's mentioning Astra Militarum. I was rather surprised by that.
I think it's more because they're the humans. So, you know, normally they're considered the underdogs in a lot of situations. Do they have a lot of the tools? Yes. However, I feel like against the list of folks that we just like put out there, I think they might die pretty quickly.
Interesting.
This is my thoughts.
I was thinking not so much we're going from the leaf blower list from days of old to what I'm calling the mulch blade list, and that is you put as many as your tanks up forward, so lots of hellhounds, lots of Lehman Russes, and you just ram them down your opponent's throat, because being that you can still shoot in the assault phase and you've got all these flamers and sponson and weapons that can, you know, if you didn't kill them from afar, you're going to kill them up close, and then you just keep moving forward, and you have the wall of humanity behind them. And so to your point, yeah, they're a little bit on the squishy side, but when they've got all those shots against all these more elite armies, I think they still could have a place, but we shall see. So I'm curious to see.
Well, you know, we'll give Brandon Grant a couple of months, and he'll be showing everybody what the meta list is for the Astra Militarum.
So true. So yeah, interesting to see how he adapts. But obviously, I'm curious to see if he sticks with Guard, if he doesn't switch over to Sisters of Battle. So he seemed to be that his little pet project during COVID-19 break there. So
I think so. Yeah. I think, it's his Sisters of Battle are definitely his passion.
Does your game day fare leave your fingers orange or your game table pizza stained? There is a better option. You need the Necronom Nom Nom. Yes, that's right. The cosmic horror and great cuisine become allies of convenience with this darkly humorous, gorgeously illustrated, and simple-to-use guide to insanely good food. 50 recipes arm you with breakfast, lunch, and dinner, from drinks to dessert, and use a unique grimoire of forbidden recipes. Don't tell the Inquisition, but you can tell your friends to find it on Amazon or wherever books are sold. Brought to you by the madmen of Red Duke Games, take the pizza shop off speed dial and treat your players to something new and delicious from the Necronom Nom Nom.
So speaking of passions, Skari, it's no surprise that you're a big fan of Drukhari. Many people put them in the bottom five. How do you feel that Drukhari fared out with this change?
The more I've been playing them, the more I can see how it's going to be hard to play Drukhari in the new edition, especially mono Drukhari. I think if you want to play like elements of Drukhari, you want to mix them in mainly with Harlequins, because Harlequins have, you know, a lot of durability and very punchy options that are decently priced in terms of the meta at the moment. Personally, I have been seeing success with them. That's mainly just because I have so much practice with them. So, you know, as a fledgling Archon, if you want to pick up and play the Drukhari competitively in the new edition, you know, just you have to really kind of squeeze every element that you can from each unit. You know, I tend to end games with not very many models left, so just be prepared to basically lose your whole army just to get points, essentially, and just stick to the mission objectives instead of trying to just murder your opponent.
So what you're saying is the rumors are true. Okay, they're still on hard mode. Interesting.
It definitely still, it doesn't change. You know, if you're used to playing Drukhari, it's going to be the same thing. You just have to maybe adapt and overcome a little bit. But it is not the easiest army to play or to learn how to play, right? But it is very rewarding when you learn how to play it and you play it well, because you have a tool for everything.
So true. Very much so, very enjoyable. So yeah, I'll be curious to see how that all pans out. And who sticks with Drukhari, because that was definitely, they had kind of a renaissance in 8th edition, and be curious to see what happens to them in 9th. All right, this new phenomenon, maybe you guys may not have seen it, is people who are in the 40K hobby like to complain online.
You don't say.
So who's, you know, it comes up once in a while. So we like to be supportive here at the Exterminatus podcast. Whose faction needs a little hug, needs some sympathy, and justify that they're really struggling at this point?
My vote goes for Eldar. You know, long live the Eldar. Even worse than Dark Eldar, I'm just going to say. If you know an Eldar player out there, give them... No, this is just me being very sarcastic, of course. But I think a lot of Eldar players will cry a tear because they feel like, you know, everything went up and their army is unplayable. So give them a hug. Tell them it's okay.
Is this a case of simply they move the cheese on them and that there's still a lot of good stuff in that codex just now in different places? Or is it truly just...
Is it truly a complete show? Pardon my language. I think there's a lot of play right now. It's what I would say is a blanket statement. It's a new edition. They put a complete rework on all of the points. Everybody has to stop looking at it with 8th edition colored glasses and look at it from a 9th edition perspective.
Sounds like there's hope there. I think there's still a chance.
There's always a chance. You're telling me there's a chance.
There's a chance. All right. Ray, who do you think is the one who needs some help?
Honestly, I don't think we can really tell. I can tell you from what people are complaining about on the internet, which in a lot of cases seems to be Genestealer Cult. But I mean, we haven't even
vocal
started
about that.
Yeah. Until we actually start seeing some, you know, more people playing outside of just, you know, a few groups who have got their hands on an early release of the new rule set, we can't really say yet. Not with any kind of, you know, data to back it up with.
That is true. I'm curious to see what comes out of the woodwork as people start playing. But yeah, it seems overwhelmingly that, man, Genestealer Cult players are just very upset. And I'm kind of, I could see some of their points, but I don't see them being bottom of the pile just yet.
Ridge Runners are still good.
Yeah.
Just take 9 of them. They're still amazing. They can, you know, they're still so good. Like, what are you, just 9 Ridge Runners and Alphas, you know, and just sit there shooting stuff with las cannons all day long, moving and shooting. It's just, it's still really good.
Right. And they actually got better now that they can move and shoot without the minus one. So I was like,
whoa. And they can shoot all their stubbers into combat. So it's hard to tie them up with just chaff. Like, it's. Yeah, they came out, like, at least that hasn't changed at all.
So that was one I was kind of like, okay, what am I missing here? So that's not a big deal. Okay, so the Muscle Beach list is still a little overcosted at this point. Okay, fine. The shenanigans that you can do on deployment are still there. And in a game where board control is more important than ever, why wouldn't that be a plus? So I'm still at a loss at this point where people feel that they're falling apart. But okay, who knows? So interesting. So some other factions that are maybe a dark horse choice. You mentioned Harlequins kind of sprinkled in with Drukhari. Is there a dark horse faction that maybe we're going to see that was maybe not a big player in 8th edition is going to surprise people in 9th edition, at least in the early months?
Correct.
So, as mentioned, not a lot of points increases. Actually, when you figure out that the troops went up, but the war gear went down, Harlequins pretty much are the same point values as they were in 8th edition. I was kind of surprised when I started working out my army. I was like, hey, look at that.
Yeah, it's really cool to see, especially with, you know, the way that they play is going to mesh really well as well with the missions.
Yeah, especially the removing guys from objectives quickly. Let's go from there. Ray, who are your thoughts on the Dark Horse choice for the meta for 9th edition?
My choice is going to be Thousand Sons.
Dun, dun, dun.
Good old Magnus coming in from reserve, buffing himself up, being like, I will never be blown up on turn one again.
Yeah. Yeah, that's a big part of it. And with the changes to the Supreme Command Attachment, I think there's going to be less of a focus on the all the HQs and more of a focus on the units themselves. And with the Ritual of the Damned stuff, I think they're really going to be a force to be reckoned with if people don't, you know how to deal with something that's not just, you know, character models.
Or a wall of Poxwalkers to protect Ahriman. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think you're onto something, especially with all the psychic abilities that they have as well. They actually compete in every phase of the game. And we mentioned a little bit about some of those psychic secondaries. You've got enough psychers where, well, these guys are going to do the actions and these guys are going to do the smiting. So you're not like losing firepower where, say, like a Craft World player is the Farsight. The Farseer has to choose between, do I score points or do I kill something? So,
yeah, they'll have some good options. Plus, with the cults and whatnot, they have some really cool, you know, board maneuverability options with Cult of Duplicity. They've got lots of damage output with Cult of Magic. You know, they've got like a regeneration and durability with Cult of Time, basically. So I think you'll definitely see a lot of play from them. I agree. I think they're one of those to watch out for.
All right.
Oh, and Death Guard too, by the way. If you want like ultimate durability, you know, if you're not thinking Death Guard, I don't know what you're doing. Like, they are going to be filthy. Ha ha ha.
Good pun. Yeah, I'm not thrilled. You know, especially having a certain Death Guard player of national renown in my backyard, and the last thing I need to see was Death Guard get better.
Well, it's so really funny because now they can give like everybody disgustingly resilient. So all the units that you thought were easy to kill in a Death Guard army before, now they're just as tough as everything else in the army, with Nurgle demons, for example. And on talking about demons, the always strike first mechanic of Slaanesh demons is also something to watch out for in 9th edition. And an army of like three Keepers of Secrets with Selesk, or Selesk or whatever her name is, like four of those big Slaanesh demons running at you with supported, like, you know, Thousand Sons or, you know, Tzeentch demons for mortal wounds, like that is no joke either. And I've seen it in action and it is scary.
Yeah, it's funny you mentioned that because I was thinking the same thing, because Anari has that ability as well. As long as something dies earlier, the idea that, you know, that big rule change that after charged model, charged units have struck, then the defender chooses the first.
The defender picks the first all the time. It's just if you charge, you go first. But if you have always strike first, the defender will get to pick an always strike first model before any charges.
Wait, what? Say that again.
So in the charge phase or in the fight phase, you starting with the defender, you pick who goes first in combat. That's literally the first part of the fight phase. And it just says charges strike first, right? However, if you have an always strike first unit or model, that will basically fight at the same time as a charger. However, the defender gets to pick first. So if you have a big demon that has always strike first, or a unit that has always strike first, and it gets charged, the defender will get to fight with their unit first.
Wow. That will definitely surprise some people in the first few weeks.
Yes, it does. And it is very scary.
Holy cow. Interesting. I breathe some life into that ability, which usually is what's kind of scoffed upon. All right. Wow.
Yeah. So take another look at your codex. You know, you might have an old relic or warlord trait or a psychic power that might give you that ability. You know, it might have it might just breathe some new insight into something you could use it for.
Wow. 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 All right. Yeah. Yeah, I was wondering if like Anari could come back to life with some of these 9th edition rules, but I think you're right with some of the changes to Craft World. They might have a little difficulty. So, but that strike first ability, interesting. One last talk about the 9th edition meta. So let's talk about the practicality of tournament play in the last few minutes that we have here. It's already end of July. So we're looking at August, September, October, November. Realistically, there are not a lot of tournaments in the month of December due to the holidays. And then LVO, which is tickets are already on sale, if not already sold out, in mid-January. So we're only looking at about 4 months of play. And not every area of the country or even every part of the world is going to be able to open at the same time to see tournaments open. So legitimately, a player could actually still get into the top 10 with just a bunch of RTTs under their belt.
Yep. Yeah. Well, there's already some people up there, and so we'll see how that goes. But I think, you know, of course, I personally believe better be safe than sorry. So, you know, follow your local regulations and, you know, hopefully once this all blows over, we'll get back to normal. But this has definitely been an interesting turn of events for the last 6 months.
So I think the biggest thing is if the tournaments do, you know, when they do return, they will return, just a matter of when. Support your local game store. I think every point will count at this point. So and plus those stores really need that resurgence of players coming back into their stores once it's safe to do so. So I definitely agree that you could probably see somebody sneak into those top 10s that may not have been there before. It kind of reminds me of the ITC season maybe 3 years ago when you had like, well, these guys do really well in their local area and these guys do really well in their local area. We're not going to find out which local area is on top until they all meet together in LVO. I think we're kind of back to that system at this point. But without a lot of those big majors on the table, you know, Nova's already been canceled. We've already passed most of the majors that would have, you know, gone over. You might be hard pressed to find a GT between now and January. So get the points while you can. So, Scarlet, one last question I had is thought of it. So you've been to a tournament this past weekend. Anything different from a tournament organizer perspective that we need to know about 9th edition in the first few weeks?
I highly recommend that if you're going to put terrain on the table, just make sure you define the terrain and accustom yourself or get used to what the terrain traits do and what they mean and have a good understanding of this. So that if you are going to put terrain on the board, that you're not just going to expect your players to sort of categorize all the terrain, like have an understanding of what traits you want on the pieces of terrain on a table when you set it up to give it the feel or the balance that you expect. And I think that would be the only thing. Other than that, the edition itself is very smooth. You know, the game works well. Don't be afraid to answer questions, definitely. But that would be the thing that I would say. Just make sure the terrain on the table has clearly defined traits so that the players understand what's going on.
And I would have made that recommendation back in 8th, but I think it's more important in 9th, especially with all the new changes with the terrain rules. Make sure everybody knows this is exactly what that means and what was intended when this terrain was put on the table. Right. So great advice there. Ray, any parting thoughts before we wrap up this week?
With next week being the release of the new edition, I definitely hope that everybody enjoys it, but also to remember to stay safe when they try to get their games in.
Sound advice, absolutely. Interesting, Games Workshop is having a release party on Saturday morning online, so I'm curious to see what that's all about. The guy from the Dark Angels, Dark Talon there is going to be spinning, you know, tunes in the background or something like that, so it'll be pretty cool. I'm definitely curious to watch. They plan to preview things to come in the new edition, so beyond the release of the Dominus box. So I'm curious to see what other new models will be coming out or new ideas. But I'm eagerly getting my hands on this, and more importantly, just get out and play. Ray and I were talking during the week just how much of the social interaction is a big part of the game and has become a big part of our lives, and just haven't seen anybody in so long. So didn't realize how much I missed that. So can't wait for this to be over, but make sure it's done in a safe and responsible manner. So Sky, once again, thank you so much for being on the show. Sky, where's the best place they can find you if they want more of your incredible content?
You have to go deep in the woods, press the buttons into the Webway Gate. The Webway Gate will open. Make sure you have lots of food, water, and supplies as you will have to trek into the Dark City. K carry a sharp knife. No, you can just go down to YouTube and Scottcast. You can find me there. You can head over to Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and or Patreon, which is like the main blog as well.
Oh my goodness! I definitely have this quick praise here. You've released, I've seen already three of your battle reports. Ninth edition as we know it. So each week as more stuff got leaked out. I know there's a thousand of choices when it comes to battle reports out there. Definitely check these out. They're a great balance between a digestible size, but also enough detail so you know what's going on. Nothing's, I find more infuriating than a battle report. Like we're 45 minutes in and I'm like, I really don't care what's happening now. It's just taking so long. I think yours are very quick to follow, understanding what's going on, learn something from every one of them. Great models, great terrain, great fun to watch, and actually learn something from it. It's a great balance. So definitely check that out.
Thanks. I'm glad you enjoy them. I love filming them, so that's a plus.
That might be a topic for a future episode. How the tricks in the trade of filming battle reports.
Yeah, you know, I've been doing it for I want to say 7 years now. So, you know, I like it. It's fun. You know, it's enjoyable. Yeah.
Not a bad day at the office, is it?
No, not at all. And, you know, until my friends get sick of me being like, can I film this for a battle report? And they're like, ah, oh, yes, Scary. Hooray!
Well, I'll tell you, if I'm ever in your neck of the woods there, I'll definitely be more than happy to stop by. I'll be joining on the fun. So,
done and done. I'll set up the garage and we're ready to rock and roll as soon as the borders open.
Sounds great. All right. With that, Ray, anything else to add before we close things up?
Not at all.
All right. So thank you again, once again, for listening to the Exterminatus podcast. Additional updates you can find again on our Facebook page. And again, enjoy the game responsibly over the next few weeks. And we'll talk to you next week.